And away we go. It's a Getaway Friday. Friday, January the 9th, 2026. How about that? 2026. 12 minutes past the hour here, WGH Talk Time. And we're so glad after the holidays to have back in studio with us Pastor Steve Whitaker from Community Christian Fellowship for the program we do each and every Friday here on WGH Talk 1115 until 12 p.m. Pastor Whitaker, here we go. New year, either one.
Hey, how are you? Good to be back here. You know, I had kind of a deja vu this morning. About 4 years ago, I was on my way into the show one evening. We were doing the evening shows, and I was driving my little Ford Ranger truck, and I got T-boned at a stop sign and flipped five times. Really, it was bad. And the guy had run a stop sign. Well, this morning, that particular evening, I was running late, and I knew I had about 15 minutes from where I was. And then this morning, I'm looking at my watch, and I thought, I got about 15 minutes. I'm driving a Ford Ranger again. And that just came into my mind because I was going past the same intersection. But today, I made it through, and nobody blew a stop sign. So
I remember that when that happened. I remember I got a call, and they said, have you heard anything from Pastor Whitaker? And I said, no. And I said, well, that's not like him not to call or let us know if he's not going to come in. Then I found out what had happened. I thought, my goodness.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I was very blessed.
Yeah.
In that accident. How's everybody doing out there? I hope good.
I think good. I think we're all into the new year now, and everybody's kind of back to work and school and doing their thing.
There's a few little Christmas things out when you go to the store on clearance, and it's just all seen. And then with this weather, I was telling Shirley this morning, my wife, that we were driving. I said, man, I said, you look outside, you think spring's on its way, but no, it's not.
It is 60 degrees right now. Can you believe that in January? And we were talking before we went on the air. I said earlier that I was at the hospital visiting somebody. 150% is what they say they're running at there. It's rough. I think it's changing temperatures.
That's a lot of it. But even before that, you know, there's a lot of viruses and flus out there. And I know that the schools are definitely getting hit pretty hard too. And it's just a tough time here all the way around when it comes to health. I encourage everyone, especially if you're elderly, man, get a flu vaccine and a pneumonia vaccine. I know that not everybody's up on vaccines or wants to be, but I think those are two that really do, if they don't stop it, they at least lessen it when we get it.
Yeah, and you know what? I know a lot of people who aren't in the greatest health might have a heart issue, might have a lung issue, and for those people, it's a particularly serious matter.
Oh, it certainly is. Certainly is. Anyway, a lot of stuff going on. Boy, a lot of stuff going on in the world, for crying out loud. I'm not going to talk about that today. I think I'm going to sit back and take a wait and see, because it's one of those situations where everyone's kind of in a mode where they're waiting to see a lot of things that'll happen. I tend to want to be an optimist and say, you know what? Let's just wait and see. I'll leave it at that. But, you know, I think that one thing I can go back to is that regardless of what we agree on or disagree on, man, do we need to have civility. And please, 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 politicians across the board, will you please take the high road and quit using foul language in your speeches? It just gets old to me. I mean, that used to be something that they talk about decorum, and they talk about, you know, oh, this president just isn't presidential. And I'm gonna agree. You know, he said things that you know, a person in that position shouldn't say. But I'm saying across the board, just stop it, because it's not just the president. It's people in Congress. It's people that are, you know, just stop it.
You know, when I heard that, when I heard the mayor of Minneapolis, which is what I think you're talking about, making those comments.
That's just one of them.
Yeah, but you know what surprised, because there has been talk about him using the language that he used in his speech. You know, honestly, I'm starting to wonder if that's a sign of the times, because I'm not even sure that has anything to do with politics anymore, because I watch people say things now in mixed company that they would have never said before.
Scott, I completely agree, and I think you're right, but what I am saying is, if you are in a position of leadership, someone may be looking to you to set the tone, so to speak, I think that you need to, I don't care what the sign of the times are, take the high road. And I will agree with you when it comes to what we refer to as the F-bomb. I hear that flowing out of everyone's mouth anymore. I know people. I've got a friend that works at a major corporation in the corporate side of it in their office, and they tell me that it doesn't matter if you're male, female, young, or old. So the language in that office is disgusting, and it just really, it just, you know, the kids in school. I say, man, they. You know, how do they get, you know what? Well, it's just a sign of the times. And then when you hear other adults, even teachers and people, just, and it's like, come on, can we go back? Well, Scott, let me ask you a question. What was wrong with decency?
I don't know. But, you know, even in radio, when I first started, if you got a bad word on the air, I mean, it happened. Oh, maybe twice a year, something like that would happen. And honestly, the person, as soon as they did it, would get bright red because they knew they realized what they had done. Now, it's just part. It happens more often than certainly two times a year. Now, a lot of times people will apologize, but they think it's about. See, here's what it's the thought process behind language that I find interesting, because they think it's about. Well, I should be allowed to say that, or I can say that. It's about the people listening. You know, if you're listening with your granddaughter, grandson, if you're taking somebody to school, if you're listening in an office, a doctor's office, you know, places that I know that...
You have an obligation to do.
Yes, that's why people who are on air who maybe might have more colorful vernaculars don't do it on the air.
Well, and in the case with you, Scott, first of all, you're on the air, so you're not going to do that, hopefully. But I've been off the air with you enough to know. I hope you're not just babysitting my conscience, but,
No, that's me. You're right.
But I've never heard foul language come out of your mouth.
There, you know what? It never did. I don't know why.
You're a pretty popular guy.
There you go.
So why do you need this? Is it, hey, look, I'm cool too. And I think what really bothers me is when I hear people maybe, even in coaching or something, they think they're cool with the guys. No, you're not. You know, you have an obligation to set the tone with them as to what's decent and what's acceptable and respectable. And you don't do that. You know, some of our greatest coaches out there, Tony Dungy, never a foul word out of his mouth. And you know, the list goes on and on. There's several. And then there's the ones that I know are more colorful. But what's the point? What does that make you to use offensive language?
Well, it's funny to me because a lot of them will say they don't realize they're doing it, but, you know, firsthand, I guess, is always the way to go. Working in the school system, which I have for a long time, I worked with somebody who had a rather colorful vernacular amongst certain people, but they could turn it off and turn it on. They knew if it was her and I and, let's say, students, never a foul word. Never a foul word. If it was her and I and, let's say, an administrative person, never a foul word. But if it was her and I or her and I and, let's say, somebody she felt comfortable around,
It flowed out
like water out of the faucet.
Wow. You know, I've got a good friend, and he had a very colorful younger life, spent a lot of years running the bars, hanging the bars, and, you know, he got to a point where he decided that God needed to be more important in his life, and he gave his life to Christ, and he told me, he said, one of the first things that happened to me, it suddenly hit my conscience that had to stop, and he said, I turned it off. He said, it turned it off like a switch, and so you can do it.
Oh, yeah.
You can do it, and wow, you know, I just, I don't get it. I know young people, for instance, young people, when they're talking to me, and I spend a lot of time with young people, I had a building full of them the other night throwing cornhole and talking and conversing. I don't know what all their language is behind my back, but I know that I never hear it in front of me. So they can turn it off. And the very fact that you turn it off tells me that you know that it's probably not right.
Well, it's interesting to me how age plays a part in this as well. Now, I will overhear a conversation between people who might be 20, 18 years old, and it's a very colorful vernacular. But if they're talking to me, it usually isn't.
Yeah. Because they know. So I'm just saying there's so many things, when you really think about it, when you look at the world stage, the national stage, the local stage, if we all adapted a policy of decency, of doing what's right, of thinking about other people first, man, could you imagine, Scott, you know, just think for a minute the massive changes we could see. If you didn't have, if you really had a situation where a handshake was as good as a contract, and, you know, people did, aha, I got a loophole, I never signed anything, I'm going to do this, that, or the other, and or whatever the case may be. I mean, could you imagine how much better, you know, if you could send your kids out to play every day without worrying about, you know, and whether they're going to get hurt. And you know, even in the case of crime and things that happen, people get off so easy anymore that they don't fear doing some of these things.
Well, I've often wondered, and I think years ago we had a conversation about this. What, you know, the things we put people in jail for sometimes are a little strange. I think maybe they could be better served by community service or paying a fine. I, you know, and I'm not saying that financial crimes are okay, but I don't know that incarcerating those people and giving them a felony is the best way to solve that problem.
First of all, the problem with that is they are unable to earn money to make restitution.
There you go.
So why did you just... I'll tell you one that always really gets me. And when guys are behind, or ladies too, are behind in child support, they'll put them in... First of all, they'll take their driver's license. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. This person needs their vehicle to go make money to pay child support, so you're taking their driver's license. Now, I know what the state thinks. The state thinks, well, what they're going to do is they're going to need that car back, so they're going to pay that child support. And the amount of money they got to pay to get them reinstated and then go on high risk, I mean, it's a big headache. But the truth is that a lot of times people aren't paying child support because it's kind of tight doing it anyway. Well, now you put them in a situation where they can't even get to work. And now it's a bigger burden on the state because the state's paying out more child care, or, you know, they're paying, I forget what it's called. What is it called when they give a mother help for her kids? When,
oh, welfare?
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. They know, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. It just slips my mind. I know it well. Anyway, but, you know, they're paying more of that. And, you know, usually a lot of times that's the reason the state then, or the local, it would be the state, goes after that person to begin with because they're paying this money out and they want to get money back. Well, if the person can't work, I mean, talking about counterproductive, it makes no sense whatsoever. And those are some laws that I really think need change. And along with you on the whole thing about financial crimes, our prisons should not be full of people that did financial crimes. Now, financial crimes are really... I might make an exception, Scott, with financial crime against the elderly and seniors. That is not just a financial crime. That, in a sense, is a physical crime because it devastates them. When they lose everything they have, or a majority of what they have, to these scammers, it physically impacts them the way that many times they cannot recover.
Well, and you know who has figured this out, that financial crimes may not be, the best idea may not be to go after people, is the IRS. The IRS, boy, 50s, 60s, 70s, and really into the 80s, if you owed back taxes,
they were on you,
and they were ready to prosecute you and put you in prison. That really isn't so much the case anymore. I mean, they will make every effort, almost. They will break their back to get you on a payment plan. They will do
they
whatever.
They get more money that way.
And that's what they finally learned.
Finally learned.
When they're in prison, you're not going to collect any money.
You know, it's interesting. I was in a jury selection pool one day here locally, and the prosecutor was talking, and we just got into a conversation in between, you know, them asking questions, you know how they do, and somehow we got on the subject of scammers, and he was saying that what a lot of people don't realize is These guys that do phone scams, first of all, most of them are out of the outside of the United States to begin with. The other thing is, he said, there's so much of it that unless it involves millions of dollars, the IRS is the only one the FBI is the only one that has the ability to look deep enough and go through the channels to find these people to begin with. And unless it involves millions of dollars, they won't take the resources and do it. So the truth is, these guys are out there, the ones that are getting you for $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, even $100,000. The local enforcement do not have the ability to do anything. And the major enforcement will only do ones that are really high crimes because they have to limit their resources. So the bottom line is, these people that are out there scamming, young and old, I'll tell you an interesting story. Two of my kids, this tells you how prevalent it is. One of my children was working at school several years ago, and a call came into the school that it was the Marion Sheriff's Office, and they needed to speak to her. They got her out of class. They took her to the, she went down to the office, and this guy said that they had missed something. I don't remember what it was, but they had to immediately go and get a card for whatever it was. They had to electronically send them a couple thousand dollars, and out of the fear, I mean, this is the Marion Sheriff's Office, this came out on the school phone, and she immediately did what they said, and it was one of those things that, you know, as they're going to the bank, stay on the line, because if you go on the line, they'll be at the school to arrest you, you know, there's a warrant out for you. Has my daughter freaked completely out. She goes and pays it and finds out they even had hijacked Marion's Sheriff's Office number, and then it was, wasn't, but a couple years later, my son's a pretty savvy guy, too, and so is his boss, the owner of the company. Call comes into the company, very similar. And his boss, they called me, his boss called me. He's listening in on this thing. He says, what do you think? You know, do you think your son owes this? And, you know, do you think this is a scammer? He goes, I really think this is real. These guys were great. And stayed on the phone, and my son drove to the sheriff's office, and the minute he cleared the front door, the line went dead, and that was the end of it. You know, and the point is, if someone like my son's boss, who's a very savvy businessman, can be fooled by these people, what chance do you think a senior citizen has at home? They don't have any chance. And we saw that case just a year or so ago, where the older gentleman was so rattled that he shot a Uber driver that was bringing the packet for him to whatever he had to do. The guy was so rattled and thought that they were part of it that he shot him. And it's just sad all the way around. So I think financial crimes, yeah, we really got to think about. There's a lot of things you can do. I mean, you can threaten someone in the Financial Times to huge sentences. That would be a good way to do it. Threaten them to a huge sentence. If you don't start restitution right away and do this, we're going to attach all of your property until it's paid for and make them make restitution, but allow them to continue to work with that hanging over the head that we're going to take your property and put you in jail, and don't think we're fooling because we'll do it, and then put some teeth behind it. I think that that would be a smart thing. But to take somebody that did a financial crime, even check kiting or something like that, why are we paying for them massive amounts of money to sit in jail and eat all day in a heated place in the winter and air conditioning in the summer, and you've got people out there that probably need to be in jail. You know, jail might be the place. Unfortunately, there are some people, Scott, that I think function better being institutionalized than they do on the street. It's just sad, but they do. I particularly know a young person that got out of school a couple years ago, and I think that the safest place for them and for everyone else around them is if they're institutionalized. Now, with that being said, one thing we've pretty much done away with that I think is right, and everyone said, well, you know, this is forced slavery again and whatnot, when they used to make license plates. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And when they used to, Marion out here had one of the biggest dairy farms around. They supplied the milk and dairy for all the farms, and then when it went to where they just sold the milk, you know, they recouped that money. It actually taught people a trade at the same time. My son-in-law and daughter who milk cows, one of the guys that was part of their crew there, when he was paroled, came and helped my son-in-law, and my son-in-law turned around and then found him employment elsewhere, full-time employment. These are things that when people that are in the institutions, they need to do this kind of stuff. The road crews, you know, there's a difference between having a road crew that's supervised and having a chain gang like you saw in Cool Hand Luke. You know, big difference. And I don't think we need any Cool Hand Luke situations out there with guys on horses and bullwhips and, you know. But actually, I think that, you know, hey, put people to work. And put them to work where the work is actually hard enough that, A, it gives them a little strength, and B, it makes them think, man, I don't want to go back to prison and do that again. I think I'm used to working now. Let me get a good job. So many things we've ruined through our compassion. You know what I mean? Like, you know, sometimes you can go overboard with compassion. It's just like disciplining a child. I don't want my child to cry, so I'm going to let him get away with murder. Well, guess what? They're going to expect you to get away with murder their whole life. So go ahead.
I think it's interesting because what it reminds me of is emotions. And two of the emotions that I think are getting much larger in the world we live in now are fear and anger. You know, I see, because I most of these scams are based in fear. That if somebody gets a letter or somebody gets a call, even though they know they haven't done anything wrong, they're playing on the fear of what could happen if you don't pay this money or if you don't do this thing. There's always a fear in the back of people's mind. And anger is an interesting one because there are so many things that people get angry about that they don't even know the reason the thing happened. They just don't like the outcome. You know, like circle back and tie some of this together, like the language thing we were talking about earlier. Now, I don't know. What's brought this on is this conversation with this mayor. Now, does he talk that? I mean, has he done that in press conferences before? I don't know. Maybe he has, maybe he hasn't. But I'd like to know that. Doesn't make it right. Doesn't make it right at all. But I want—is this how he operates? You know, we don't know a lot about mayors. We don't know a lot about how. We don't hear that on a national level, unless some.
Could you imagine if a judge on a bench started cussing somebody out? That he,
right.
You know, come on. You know, you have to have a certain amount of respect for yourself. But this anger thing, I think, is pretty real. It's interesting you brought that up. Someone very close to me recently. A relative, we went to have a conversation and something political came up and it wasn't even anything really big. All of a sudden they went into this tirade, political tirade that I'll tell you what, I put a zipper on my mouth and threw away the key like my mama used to do, because I'll tell you what, if I'd have said one word in defense of what I thought versus what they were saying, I wasn't so sure they weren't just going to smack me. You know, where does this come from where we can't even have civil debate without people going off the deep end?
You know, I don't know, but I do know it comes back to one of the big problems is we cannot hear other people's opinions that are different than ours without lashing out. And that's a shame.
We have to, Scott.
Yeah.
You know, look, here's the thing, and everyone has an opinion. And let me qualify that for a reason. It may be their environment they grow up in. It may be what they listen to. We've talked about this several times. If you listen to one of the very far right news places or you know opinion shows all the time, you're going to feel one way. If you listen to a very far left one all the time, you're going to get their perspective. And the truth is, if we want to have any balance to what we know and think, we actually listen to both, because then you're getting both sides, and then you can take your own mind and reason in your own mind which one makes actually the most sense. But nobody wants to do that. If I listen to If I want to be conservative, I'm going to listen to conservative. If I want to listen to liberal, I'm talking to liberal. And I'm not saying you even have to give a steady diet to the opposition, but at least listen and understand why. If you're so adamant about a situation that you're going to get angry with me, then I better understand why you feel that way. Why is it? Because if I ever have a chance of winning you over to the way I think is right, I better understand why you're there.
You know, I was thinking about this morning because I was driving in, and for the first hour this morning, we had Stephen Wolf on, who's a Republican running in the 86th district race here. And we've had them all on. Now, we had Wesleyan Davis on, we had Ben Weber on, and now we've had Stephen Wolf on, who are the three Republicans running in the primary. I don't think there are any Democrats in that race at this time, or we'd have them on too. But he was the last one of the three to have on. And I was driving in this morning, and I was thinking about how so many news outlets, or people who call themselves news outlets, actually go now and book the guest depending on if the guest agrees with them. And I thought this morning, I don't know anything about Stephen Wolf. That's why I'm having him on. I want to know what he has to say. I want to know what he feels about things. I don't know who's endorsed him or who he's talked with. That's why I have to talk with him. So, but that's not for my personal knowledge. It helps my knowledge, but it helps the listener's knowledge. And that interview will get a big rating because it's the first interview he's done, and people want to get to know him, and this is the 86th district. But people don't approach it that way anymore. If I know you disagree with me, you're never getting on. And if you agree with me, I'll have you on every week. And that's how it's approached now, and that's very unfortunate.
Yeah, it's very, instead of reaching the broader audience, you're reaching a targeted audience that will be loyal to you all the time. No one addressed this better than Jay Leno when the whole thing over... what was his name? His name just slipped my mind. The guy that got in trouble for, they took him
out. Oh, Kimmel.
Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel. And you know, and what Jay Leno said, he said, you know, no one really ever knew where I really stood. Kind of like with you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you get an idea, but you don't know exactly. It's because, you know, he didn't. He attacked. He made fun of everybody.
Yeah.
But the point is, you know, now, if you turn on a Jimmy Kimmel or a Stephen Colbert or one of the night shows, you know where their politics are. They spend their first monologue in the beginning doing nothing but attacking, you know, the president and anybody associated with anything right wing. So what they then get in that audience is they get a very loyal audience that they can whip up their feelings, and they know they're going to be there. They're not going to go anywhere else.
And that's what you see. When you book the guest that is, you know, when you have that philosophy of, if you agree with me, I'll have you on every week. If you don't agree with me, you're never getting on. You get that loyal audience, but it's a much smaller audience than what you would have if you would have somebody on who disagreed with you. And what I can't figure out in these things on the whole is, like our governor's race, because that got a lot of attention this week because they both picked their lieutenant gubernatorial.
Yeah,
they did. Same day. And I've had them both on. I've had Vivek on. I've had Amy Acton on, both since they've announced they're running for governor. I think if you listen to either one of those interviews, you would say they were fair. You would say I gave them both the same time. And, you know, it was what it was. But most people can't do that. And a lot of candidates won't come on a show like that. You know, Amy Acton's not going to go on a show that already has told you they're going to vote for Vivek Ramaswamy. And Vivek Ramaswamy is not going to go on a show.
But you know she should. You know why? Because it gives her the opportunity to get her position out to the opposition, which may win some votes over to you. But you're right, they don't. And you know, it's interesting, Scott, that I think when it comes to any of these candidates, if I would give someone some advice right now that was out there and they say, and I'm going to vote, but I don't know who I'm going to vote for, I would say this. Look at both candidates. If you've got whichever one is giving substance of what they're going to do, and okay, take that one. If you got another one that is playing on your emotions and trying to get your emotions emotionally go that way. And if they're both emotional, then you're in trouble. But the problem is, you know, think about substance. You know, we operate so much on emotion anymore that, candidates know if I don't get them emotionally, I'll never get their votes. And that's our fault. It's not their fault. Because we're the ones that are letting emotion guide us when we should be really, really looking at substance.
Well, the sad thing about it is the reason I think they don't do it show-wise, because they both of them, I think Vivek Ramaswamy and Amy Acton would both do a debate, and I think they will, and that's a broader audience because you want to see both people, and whoever's moderating that debate I'm sure will be agreed upon by both people. But I think the reason they don't do a show where somebody has already told you where they're going to be is they know that that person controls the mic. And yeah, sometimes
they can bait them the whole show,
and even the problem is you can say things that are completely untrue now, and because it's their show, they believe it.
Why do we get away with that anymore? I don't get it. It used to be. And I remember, you know, I've always been political to an extent. There was a third-party group when I was a young teenager, and I was the vice president of the Republican side of that back then. Not Republican. I don't mean to say it wasn't even a Republican group. It was I was the vice president of the Ohio chapter of that group. So I was very political. Now, since then, I'll tell you what, once I became a little older, I looked back and I thought, man, they're crazies. How do I ever get involved with that? But anyway, point is, I was very political. And, you know, when you're into those kind of things, they interest you and you follow them. And I think that we, it's a lot easier to think what's important and what's not, and really think about how politics work. And politics, I'm not proud of how we handle politics these days. It's necessary. It's a necessary evil. I have to laugh when I see how people get so whipped up over stuff. It's not a funny laugh. It's a sick laugh. Like, I don't believe this. But one thing you said a minute ago about, we were talking about how you know your audience. You know the old saying, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush? And I think they kind of think that way. As long as I stick to either being hard right or hard left, I'm going to have my audience that's always going to be there. They're always going to approve of me, and at least I can count on that. And no one wants to take that risk anymore and be broad.
You know what? This is what saddens me, because I always want to argue that people are smarter than we give them credit for, society. But then every so often you see something and you go, wow. You know, last week when, and not to get into the Venezuela thing, but when Maduro was captured, somebody put a meme up, clearly a meme, before any pictures were ever released, of Maduro being escorted by officers. Now, this was not a real picture. This is not the real one. Now, he had no handcuffs on in this picture because it's a meme, and the only picture they could probably find of him was without handcuffs before the actual pictures came out. And somebody commented on the picture, "I can't believe they don't have him in handcuffs." Thought it was a real picture.
I don't know what to believe anymore. But I guess I lost my train of thought a minute ago when I was talking about being in politics. One of the things that really strikes me odd is that back in the day, early days of politics that I can remember, they were obviously so much earlier, if somebody blatantly lied, they were called out on it and they were shamed for it, and they may even have to recant. Now, it does not matter. You can sit there, you can lie your head off. The president can do it, the vice president, any member of Congress, anyone, they can just lie their pants off. And there are literally zero consequences.
Well, and here's right this week, you know, Mike DeWine. Now, however you feel about Mike DeWine, this man, and if people have...
He has me in the rapids most of the time. I don't know whether I'm going to hit the bank or go right down the middle of the river.
Well, it's interesting to me this week, though. I watched him handle this these accusations about the daycare centers. And fact is, in Ohio, there has been no proof yet. Now, maybe there will be. There has been no proof yet shown that there's been any fraud.
Right.
But Mike DeWine had to have press conferences on two different occasions and speak with reporters about rumors about how this, that there was fraud. Now, that's a problem where you're, that would not have happened 25 years ago. The governor of a state would not have to give a
press conference.
Rumors. Yeah, rumors. Really now, accusations that have some fact in them, yes, you would have to address that. But not rumors, but the rumors now are so prevalent that people will believe anything.
And what's sad is to me is I love news. I love interesting things. I mean, my wife yells at me all the time because, you know, there'd be a TV show on, and I don't, I'm not finding anything interesting on that. But, however, here's this article that I can read that's... But, you know, what's really... And it's really struck me more lately. I have no clue whether they're true or not.
This is true.
Because they are written so well. I mean, even pictures. I'll give you an example. I do not know anything about our current president except what I've seen on the news and TV. Is not the truth for all of us? I mean, really don't. Really don't. Okay. Back when he was running for president the first time, he was in a conversation that was being recorded, and he made a comment about when you're a celebrity, basically, you can grab a woman in a private area and she doesn't say a word. Okay. That's what he said. Okay. I could see probably most sad ladies have to say this. I gotta sadly see that many men celebrities, they get a power about them, and they know that that's probably true. That they could get away with that because they're a celebrity. And that's what he said. Now, is that disgusting? Yeah. Should he have said it? Never. If he acted on it, he's even sicker yet, right? Since then, there literally hasn't been any hard proof that the man has done anything immoral. There have been some lawsuits that came up. There have been some stories that have come up. There's been accusations come up. Nothing that was really ever proved. Now, look, first let me explain something. I could completely believe all of it, and I could completely believe none of it. You guys don't know how I feel about this. I'm just making a point. I had someone tell me the other day that he was the sickest pervert there's ever been in the White House, okay? Now, my mind's going back to some things I know about, okay? And I'm thinking, wow, that's pretty bold when you consider that you know, many presidents have even paid large sums of money to get people to go away for the same type things. And I'm thinking to myself, here's the other problem. There have already been pictures out, and this is really scary. There was one out where he was actually talking about young girls, and they find out that it was AI. Wow, that scares the pants off of me. Okay, so first of all, let me say this. For those of you that think that I'm defending Donald Trump, I don't know what's true or what's not. I just don't. I hope the best. I fear the worst, okay? But what I'm saying is, we can't even believe what we see anymore in on a television. Well, not TV, but if they'll show it on TV, many times they do. But what pops up on our phone, I can't believe he just said that, and he never said it. I mean, this AI stuff's scary. They can tape my voice and go make a phone call to my wife and have a conversation. She doesn't know it in me. That's insane. They can take my face and copy it, and through a computer. Have you seen these things? This is really freaky. I've been tempted to do it with some of my relatives. But they can take a picture now and animate it. Have you seen
that? Oh, yes, yes.
They can take a picture of you, and all of a sudden you're talking to people. If they have a recording of your voice, they can take a photograph, and you can be walking and talking, expressing. This is scary. Because we don't know what we can trust and what we can't.
Well, you know, and this is the problem. You know, one of the issues is personality. Now, this is where we all get in trouble. If somebody has a personality that people consider, like I'll use our own, somebody who's no longer, what, President Harding. Let's go there. Okay, President Harding. Now, when he was in office, most people would find anything negative about him hard to believe because he was considered an upstanding, decent man. That's not right. He's a good speaker. He appeals to
John
women.
John Kennedy
the same way. Yes, absolutely. Eisenhower the same way. Now, we've learned since that they had their own little picadillos in their life and things that they did. So now if you say, well, they would have done this, it may be true, it may be not, but you may be more apt to believe it because you know of some of the things that they did do. And that comes to the Donald Trump issue, I think, is, you know, we do know that he said the thing about Hollywood. So it's easier, I think, to believe it about him, whether it's true or not, than it is about maybe Ronald Reagan, if we heard the same thing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. You know, people do bring a lot of that on themselves if you have a past history. But I'll say this also. I am a person that firmly believes in redemption. And I believe what's sad is a lot of times people will get to a point where, you know what, I shouldn't have done this. I got to. And I'm not saying Donald Trump's that person. I'm just saying what's really sad to me is when people will dredge up their past to use it to enforce something they're doing now.
You know what's a good example of that, though, is Nixon. Because nobody, if you would have said anything devious financially behind the scenes about Nixon politically, they would believe it because of Watergate. Mm-hmm. But if you would say he had affairs, nobody believed that. But that's because of his, mm-hmm. what he did. Now, maybe I've never known that he did have an affair. He probably didn't. He's one of the rare ones, I don't think, that did. But, see, you would even laugh.
Right.
Yeah, but you would laugh.
Laugh about
but
that.
You would laugh. You would never, even though Nixon clearly had some character issues, women was not one of his problems. But we certainly would believe he would do anything else. He certainly would have you audited by the IRS. You know, we'd believe that. It's interesting because it's what your picadillos are in life. It's what your proclivities are, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, people are going to suspect you. Then there's another side of that, though. And I use this. My brother wrote a book one time, and the book was called Full Restoration. And he was kind enough to let me write a small chapter in that book. But anyway, the book was about when somebody falls from grace and the road back and how they can come back from falling from grace. Okay? And the truth is that and what I wrote on my chapter was that I feel that a person that truly desires to come back and do away with that past will actually be a better person than they were before because they're very keenly aware of the things that took them down that path. So they learn to avoid them and do what's right.
You know, isn't it, we got 5 minutes left, but it's worth getting in. Maybe this will be where we're starting next week because you know what? This came up recently, nothing to do politically, Ohio-wise. Because we had a conversation. It was a short conversation last week. I don't remember how we got on to it. But the question became, can Mike Davis ever work on television again? He served his time.
Yeah.
He served his time. We don't know that he's doing anything now as far as what he did before. Is there redemption for this man, or does he have to stay in seclusion for the rest of his life?
Well, first of all, he seems to think that he didn't do anything wrong. That's part of the problem. I've seen no repentance. And I think that's a huge part of it.
If he did.
Yeah, if he did.
If he did. If he repented.
If he truly said, you know, I've been sick, I've been wrong, this was wrong, I should have never. But here's the problem, though. People will still be suspect of him.
Forever.
I think you're in a different category when it comes to children. Completely different category. Give you a good example. There was a family friend in our family. Not close friend, but a good acquaintance. And he was always around a lot of the kids' events and stuff. And it's just nicest guy in the world. And all of a sudden, he gets arrested during COVID. He gets arrested for kiddie porn, watching it on his laptop or whatever. And he claimed that, you know, he said he was bored. And you know, this guy sat at home a lot by himself. And he said that, you know, one thing led to another, and it got worse and worse. Because honestly, pornography is a huge addiction that always gets worse, not better. And that's an excuse, but he ends up watching these children. So he gets sentenced to prison. Blew all of us away. We had no clue. And then you feel like, wow, I let him around this kid. But anyway, he's about to get out. And I know that most people I've talked to that know him say, you know, I don't want anything to do with him. I don't want anything to do with him. Because that's something that scares the pants off you. No pun intended.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
sorry about
well,
that.
Well, you know.
You know what I meant.
I know where you were going. But no, it's true, though. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I would be interested if a clearly it would be a smaller station. If a smaller station hired him to do the weather, clearly he knows how to do that. What would happen? Would they be picketed? Would they have to fire him? I don't know. I don't know.
When it comes to child sex crimes, I think he's done. I think that is one that people don't. And to be honest with you, most people in law enforcement and in a prosecutorial position will tell you that that is one of those crimes that people really, the recidivism is unbelievable in those crimes. Because there's a part of your brain that just isn't right. And to rehabilitate from that is very, very, very hard.
And it could be. And it could be. And I don't know. I wonder where the line gets drawn. Now, clearly, as we've said, financial crimes, people don't even bat an eye at that when people come out. Let's put them back on. And what? I mean, John Dean, as soon as Watergate was over, was on shows. Colson.
Chuck Colson really did turn his life around. Did some positive things in the prisons. Unbelievable.
But you know, interestingly enough, you know, we talked a little bit about Nixon there. Nixon, for as much as he was consulted for the rest of his life and all the books he wrote, every interview he ever did started with Watergate till the day he died. He could get past it.
I remember when Dan Quayle came on as vice president. And you know, they have that three-month transition period. And during that period, they actually called Richard Nixon in.
Oh, yeah.
To mentor and guide him for 3 months and see how he was. And Richard Nixon came out and said, you know, I believe that he's qualified. And these are, you know, I think. But they actually used Richard Nixon. And that's just amazing because he was an extremely good politician. He was very smart. He understood a lot. But, you know, he never got out of being Tricky Dick again.
No. And every president after him brought him in for consultation at some point about foreign affairs because he knew about foreign countries.
He really did.
But they all had to do it almost in secret. You know, they could not have a press conference with Richard Nixon and say, you know, he gave me this advice.
One thing that I wish he'd never done, though, I think he opened the door to China.
He did do that.
We should have, you know, China. Well, no matter what you think, China has openly said their desire is the detriment of the United States of America. They've said it from the get-go. It's never changed. And with that position, I don't know. And then there's that thing, you know, keep your enemies close and your friends close, your enemies closer. Maybe that's a lot of it, too. I don't know.
You know, I think time will tell. I mean, you know, Reagan obviously got communication started with Russia in a better way. But the Russia then is certainly not the Russia now.
Gorbachev was a lot different than Putin.
Yeah. And I think China under Nixon is certainly different than China is now. I don't know that Nixon would have ever dreamed the technological age.
And it's scary. But I will say, I do want to see. Let's do a show on this. Write it down because we'll forget it.
We will forget it.
Where do you think that we're going? And we better pay attention to this. Where do you think we're going in the future with all this AI stuff?
That'll be next week.
I mean, come on. It's scary. I mean, like I said, I went from being able to trust what I see in a video as fact, and now everything's suspect. I don't care how real it looks.
Next week, where are we going in the future with AI? 11:15. Pastor, it's good to have you back in the studio. It goes by fast, but we're in the studio.
Yeah, God bless you guys. Yep. Good to see you. Come visit us at 209 East Water Street in Prospect, Ohio.
Which I did as a more of a yell, war cry than a yell.
And the grand prize game. Oh, my goodness. How could we ever forget that?